Good morning. Good morning. It's a beautiful morning. I don't know where you are, but it's a beautiful morning here for me at Honeydew Donuts, right on Conway Street in the South End, right off Route 18. Stop by Honeydew Donuts. There's a big crowd here. If you hear background noise, that's because there's a lot of people here, and we love that. A lot of people here at Honeydew Donuts getting the Red Bull drinks. Matt, have you had any of the Red Bull drinks yet today?
Had one. Already had one.
We're going to see how many Red Bull drinks we can get Matt to drink today. Then we'll send him home like that. So stop by Honeydew Donuts. By the way, get that windshield fixed as well. If you got a cracked windshield, I got a great solution for you. Call Citywide Glass. They're in Fall River in Dartmouth. Citywideglass.net. Here's the best part. They have a high-tech mobile tech team that will come right out to your home or your work parking lot and fix that windshield. Then they'll bill your insurance company, not you. So it won't cost you a penny out of your pocket to get that dangerous cracked windshield fixed. So call Citywide Glass in Dartmouth, call them in Fall River, or go online to citywideglass.net. We're now joined here at Honeydew Donuts by a good friend of mine, Ross Grace Jr., who's just wrapping up his career on the school committee here in the city of New Bedford. Good morning, my friend Ross. How are you?
Hey, Chris. Good morning, my friend. Listen, I want to thank you for having me again, Chris. It's always a pleasure to sit and talk with you. And I want to thank Honeydew Donuts over here on Conway. Stop on by, people. You know, it's right in New Bedford. Get a nice coffee. Start the day off on the right foot. Yep. Like Chris said, it's a little bit warm. It's nice out today, a little bit drizzy. Come by, get a coffee.
Ross, what are your reflections on being on the school committee? I mean, how many years are you on there?
Chris, I'm wrapping up 4 years.
4 years.
And it was an amazing, amazing experience, and I'm going to be transparent and upfront. I've had a lot of second guessing whether it was time for me to step back. I think we ran a heck of a campaign. We had a lot of support, and I think we got some things done in those 4 years. I really think we did a decent job. But I am going to wrap it up December 31st. We have two new people coming in, Mr. Porter and Ms. Moniz, and with the untimely passing of our friend Bruce Oliveira, there's going to be an open seat for those remaining 2 years that Bruce served. And those are going to be big shoes to fill, Chris. Big, big shoes. I learned a lot from Bruce.
Let's reflect on Bruce a little bit here, Ross. Heck of a guy. Talk about him.
Again, I like to be really, really honest. When I ran, I didn't really know Bruce Oliveira. I knew a little bit about the other incumbents. I knew of his name. I knew that he was appointed. And I kind of saw him like just as like a politician, except that was my mistake, and I had to pull that back, because once I got to know Bruce and I got to learn about his history, he was a normal, everyday, I like the word New Bedford guy. You know me, I'm a local guy, born and raised here. He was brought up in Brickenwood. He coached Little League Baseball at Great New Bedford. Then he went down to Wayland City. He's part of just about every significant piece of movement. In a way that a man can affect a city in a small but big way. And that's the words I use, a small but big way. Because in my mind, the politics, the communication skills, the negotiating, that's all important. Except when you have a good person who has the finger on the pulse of what people need in the city, and you've already been through all that, you have a stronger connection. So you're going to have a more vested interest in the quality of service and decisions that you make. And that's where Bruce was really, really good. He was savvy.
Bruce was very savvy.
And that's what I learned about him. And at first, I didn't know if I had a value for that, except the way it works is you have to know how to communicate. Mm-hmm. You know how to have to, if you want to be effective. I mean, you could just take a stance and say, listen, this is my point of view, and just fight.
Right.
You get nothing done, then you get alienated and ostracized. But when he had something in mind, he knew how to navigate through it to get the results he wanted.
Yes.
Master with the money. Master with the budgetary stuff. And he made sure our kids had what they need. Mm-hmm. We're across from Gomes School right now. In terms of the upgrades, some of these schools were falling apart, were dilapidated. He made sure that we had the money, whether it's through ESSER accounts or whatever the case may be, to make sure our kids had a better environment than they were before that he got on school committee. He did a really fantabulous job.
He made it better than how he found it.
And that's what we're there for, Chris. Right. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're there for. None of us have a magic wand, except when you engage in something, whether it's politics, profession, anywhere you go, you want to leave things just a little bit better from a true and honest heart.
Right.
And that's what I liked about him. There wasn't like that ulterior motivation. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just came from a really, really good place. And he was a baseball coach. So, yeah, you know I love that.
Like
We're
talking with Ross Grace Jr. He's wrapping up a four-year stint. He's been elected a member of the school committee here in the city of New Bedford. You Well, what are you thinking you're going to do next politically? Maybe nothing. I don't know.
Yeah, well, Chris, like I said, I'm not going to rule
it out. You learned a lot.
I learned an awful lot, and I don't want to leave that behind. And I put on a Facebook post. That's my main way of communicating. I like to control my own narrative. I really am being somewhat selfish. And as I've told you, Chris, I started organizing. I started knocking on doors. I started holding signs at 16 years old. I was coaching Little League Baseball as a scorekeeper at 17 years old. And from there on in, I was either part of the NAACP. I started little organizations, like in particular the West End Award for Community. That's, you know, that's where, you know, where. But my point is I've done this for an awful long time and work. Outside of this being the end of
you're a professional educator.
Yeah, and outside of this being 4 years of school committee, I put 17 years into the public school. So in terms of public education, that's 22 years. By the grace of God, I graduated from college very early. So I got into the public schools at about 24 years old as a school adjustment counselor at the old Normandin Junior High School.
Right.
And it was off a grant at the time. And that's why I really got a sense, because I was an ideologue. And Chris, we've talked about this. You know, I used to read these books and talk about this is how things should be. This is how teachers should talk. This is how students should be. And then you get into the real deal, nitty gritty, where the rubber hits the road. After my 2 years at Normandin, I'm sorry, 4 years at Normandin, jeez. I went to UMass Dartmouth. That's where I first started in leadership. I was the assistant director of the Frederick Douglass Union. It was an amazing experience. Then from there, I went back to the public schools. And you know what was unique about how I got back to public schools, Chris? Is the superintendent at the time, people could say what they want, was Mr. Longo.
Yeah.
Mr. Longo knew who I was from New Bedford High School.
Right.
He watched me from New Bedford High School to Providence College to Boston University. He helped recruit me when I first went to public schools. When I left, he stood on me like white on rice.
Okay.
Trying to get me back.
Yep.
It goes to the point when you invest in somebody, when you believe in somebody. Yep. You know, I took that to heart. And I remember that he was an administrator that was doing the real work, and for him to like kind of just keep an eye on me and say, Ross, we value what you do, we have faith in what you do, and to bring me back. So I went to Kearney Academy as an adjustment counselor. Then I went and I became assistant principal at Keith Middle School. That's an experience. See, that's what we talk about, where the ideologues have their great ideas, and I'm not trying to put them down, except the book people who like to read and have all these, you know, that's where you really, really learned. And then I went back to Kearney as assistant principal, and back to Keith, you know, I mean, I worked at the middle high school level, and then things changed with a certain administrator, but the values changed and the culture shifted and the fabric, the things that make a difference, the camaraderie amongst teachers, the unification, the history of the schools, to me, that kind of disappeared. And we'll talk about this too, Chris. This is where MCAS became very, very pivotal to how I saw the direction that we were going in the public schools. Because I do believe in testing. I do believe in assessment. You have to have measuring sticks to make sure that what the teachers are teaching is translating into some type of growth for our students. MCAS got weaponized at that time. And I have different perspectives on it now because we have different leadership. But I left the public schools in a way that I didn't like leaving, because I was pushing back, and this leadership at the time didn't do well with independent thought, and it manifested in ways that became just in a way that I wanted to wrap my public education career up differently, and I, by the grace of God, I was able to with public schools in a very good space. I think we got an outstanding superintendent, and but yeah, and going back to MCAS, when you standardize things and you have testing dictated by private corporations to get the funding, and they demand certain results, and they don't have the connection to the students or to their environment or to their circumstances, and you're telling a child that they can only graduate if they demonstrate the capacity to test, not the capacity to think critically, not the capacity to connect with people, have a sense of self-confidence. And then you hold teachers accountable for that when this is a societal and community. Education is a community endeavor. It is not just on teachers. It's not just on families. It's not just on children. It's all us working together. So when you're going after the teachers for not getting certain grades and hold them accountable, that became a problem, because now, going back to how the fabric of the school got dismantled, the teachers are being assessed not on the growth of the child, but how the child scores. And the teachers were being held accountable, so now they're being written up. That's demoralizing. You want to build your teachers up, not take away from them. it creates a certain level of unhealthy competitiveness between the teachers. The teachers were asking, if we got a new student into the classroom, this happened at Kearney Academy. I remember teaching, and it stuck with me, Chris. It stuck with me. It's why I became passionate. And it was a new child coming from another building. The questions changed. It wasn't, where's this child coming from? Is this child eating at night? Does this child have electricity at night?
Right.
What's this child's family's background?
Mm-hmm.
It was, how well did they test in their last score, in their last school? And that rang a light bulb in my head, and it just kind of changed how I saw. I was like, I'm here to help do what people did for me. I don't remember half the stuff I learned in school, but I developed confidence.
Yes.
I developed the ability to interact with people. I developed a sense of, I can do this.
Yes.
And I was given a broad context. Like, history was important back then. Culture was important back then. Socialization was important back then. And that's the adhesive to a child's fundamental learning, the ability to connect with people, believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in a job, you don't always know what you're doing when you get in there.
Right.
You don't always know.
Right.
But if you believe in yourself,
right,
and you can think critically and you can connect with the people around you, you become a really, really effective professional.
Yes.
And I felt those values were learned. I'm going on, Chris.
No, that's fine. We're speaking with Ross Grace Jr. He's just wrapping up 4 years on the school committee. And I like Ross a lot. I think he contributed quite a bit to the public school system. We're live from Honeydew Donuts here in the south end of New Bedford, right on Conway Street, right off Route 18. That's how you can come by and say hello to us. We are here. We'll be here till noon. I love Walter Meneses' Honeydew Donuts. The food is great. The drinks are great. By the way, this holiday season, Shooting Supply has the deals that you need. Save $90 on the Smith & Wesson 9mm Shield EZ. Now just $399. The new Sig Sauer P365X Macro is in stock at Shooting Supply. Come see the latest in America's most popular handgun line. On a budget, try the Taurus G3C with a lifetime warranty. Just $219 after the rebate. You need ammunition? Who doesn't? 500 rounds of Winchester service grade 9mm. Only $119. Remember, gift cards are not, you don't need a firearms license to get a gift card. And they're available for that hard-to-buy sportsman at Shooting Supply. Find all the best holiday deals at Shooting Supply, located at 848 State Road in Westport. Go online at shootingsupply.com. We're going to take a break. Come down and visit us at Honeydew Donuts. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back. It's a beautiful day here in New Bedford. We're broadcasting live from Honeydew Donuts on Conway Street, right off Route 18. Come on down. I've already had a lot to eat, but it's really, really great food here, great drinks. We're having a wonderful conversation with my friend Ross Grace Jr., who's just wrapping up 4 years on the school committee. Ross, I want to ask you a question. You're a professional educator, a parent, school committee member. What do the kids need? That's what it's all about.
Yeah, Chris, that's such a simple and complex question. All children need, all children. And this is where we go beyond political lines, we go beyond ideologues. All children need a sense of safety. They need a sense of confidence in themselves. They have to feel safe. All children need to eat in the morning. They need to go to bed and sleep at night. All children need parents who love them and put them first. And when we go into the fundamental building blocks, because there's a lot of pressure put on the school, on the schools.
Yes.
To do the job that a family should be doing their best to do. Now, we are living in economic trying times. Homelessness is off the chart. It's hard to get a job that pays all the bills. There's tremendous stress on the average everyday family. Society has changed. Social media has had a lot to do with it. You don't find the family as cohesive as it once was. So that's a significant challenge, except when you have a child. I have three beautiful children. I was raised by a very strong mother. Just to give people a little bit of background, I'm trying to be honest here. My dad was locked up for 16 years. I was raised by my mother in Brickenwood with my siblings. We grew up in the projects. There was stuff around us, but I had a mother who said, I'm going to do everything to put my children first, which means that she would do what she had to do to make sure that we had food, even if we were getting it from where there's the block cheese or the bags of rice or the Spam. She made sure that we had food. She made sure that if I did something wrong, Chris, that I was held accountable. In other words, if the teacher called my mother for anything, my mother wouldn't argue and flip out on the teacher and try to protect me from doing something wrong. I was held accountable. So once we do that, once a family does that, once a parent does that, a child gets a clear and cohesive message that this is acceptable and this is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. There's a certain thing as adult. You don't talk back to adults.
Right.
These are fundamental values that I believe translate. And I think we've lost. I think when children do things wrong, and again, some parents, because they're struggling or they're feeling like, man, I'm not doing enough, that they stop protecting their child when they're doing what's not right and what's not good for their future development.
Yes.
And I come from the old school model, from the Dr. Waters model. And I modeled the way I did things, especially at Kearney Academy, of when something is done right, you reward them, you praise them. Same in baseball. If you're doing something wrong, Chris, if you're lying, if you're cheating, if you're disrespectful, you hold them accountable, because if they learn that when they're young, you don't have to worry about them having that confusion in mind and doing when they're older, where there's serious consequences.
Right.
My mother established a work ethic. Families, try to hear me out here. It's important. I'm saying this as a parent of three. It's important that your priority, that my priority, is the well-being of my children, and to do anything for my children that prepares them for a very complex and challenging future. And so I think with the schools do have a responsibility, but I know for me and my three children, it was my job. I am the first educator. The teacher is not the child's first educator.
Right.
I am. The woman I was with, she was the first educator. We were the first educators of our children. That's the foundation building blocks. A child is developmentally in a place where they have a sense of who they are by 4 or 5 years old, Chris. That's the building blocks.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the schools get them, they're building upon those building blocks. So
right.
If there's a weak foundation from birth to age 4 or 5, it's a shakier foundation. Not to say that a child can't overcome those odds, except the teacher can only build upon the foundation of what was built at home. And again, it's trying times. I understand the stress factors. Chris, you know I've committed myself to working with my community,
yes,
people who are struggling in need. But as a parent, I have to take full ownership for myself, my decisions, my behaviors,
right,
me being a model for my children, and what my children do.
We have Ross Grace Jr. with us. We're broadcasting here. We'll be here till noon at Honeydew Donuts on right off Route 18, Conway Street. Come on down. The food here is amazing. The donuts, they got all kinds of... They just had Santa Claus here the other day, and maybe he'll come by again. I don't know. I'm here, though.
Yeah.
Ross,
Mr. Meniz just gave me a nice sausage and cheese on a bagel and a nice hot coffee to start my day.
It's the best. Walter Meniz has got this shop. Of course, he's got the one up on Cushion Avenue in the North End. So how important, speaking of eating, are the nutritional programs within public schools for the kids that maybe don't have the home life that you and I had?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you again, I can't speak enough of the current superintendent. And I had a platform that I ran upon, Chris, and that's why when I was debating whether I'd run or not, like, we had reached our goals. One of it was to try and change the culture of the public schools, which is like turning the Titanic. But you do that by having the right type of leadership with the right type of values. When I first started, we had Mr. Anderson, and he was a great guy. I think he did a great job. But I said, I'm a homegrown guy. And the current superintendent has children in the public schools. He worked in the public schools. So he has a value to making sure that all children are fed.
And
now, that's
Leary.
Important. And,
yeah.
Yep. And he helped build that new building. I think they're contemplating naming it after Bruce Oliveira, which I think would be the right thing to do.
The new health clinic.
Yeah. He's making sure that the basic, and again, the family is the first building block, but he's doing the best he can to supplement that by making sure that there is a health clinic, by making sure that there are healthy foods for the kids, to make sure that children are eating every day. And as kids, Chris, you know that we all complain about the food there. You know, we used to look forward to Fridays with the cream of turkey and the tea and a block pizza, you know what I'm saying? But he's trying his best to make sure there's a well, healthy diet for our children. He's trying to make sure that their health needs are taken care of. You know, there is a need because we do have some parts of the community where they're economically disenfranchised. So I think he's doing the right thing. Children have to have the basic things, Chris. Like, their health has to be taken imperatively. Eating is imperative, because if you're going to school and you haven't eaten...
Yeah, you're not going to learn.
You're going to fall asleep.
We build $100 million buildings, and then...
Yeah.
What is the... It doesn't cost that much more to make sure they have a breakfast or a lunch, whatever it is.
Because and then the kid's hungry,
right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can't learn like that.
Right. And you and I didn't grow up that way, but it's... Children don't get to decide who their parents are.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and that's why it's complex, because when you see a child who's having some behavior, this child might be a genius. He or she might have some talent or some gift that hasn't been tapped into. And again, the stress factors on families is insurmountable right now. But at the same time, and I'm saying this to my parents as directly as possible, our children have to come first before our own interests, before how we want to project ourselves.
Our desires. Yes.
Yeah, we have to put our children first. And when we do that and we're being parents, there's a difference between having children and being a parent. When we decide to parent and make sure that we do anything we can, that's sending a good message, because we don't want to say we're doing anything with our kids and we're stealing from stores and I get children need to eat. That's also sending them the wrong message. You know,
right.
Like, we just have to be cognizant of our role and how important it is to be a family member.
We have Ross Grace Jr. with us. He's just finishing up his term on the school committee. We're down at Honeydew Donuts on Route 18, Conway Street. Come by, say hello. We got quite a crowd here. Ross, with all that in mind, what do we do about the problem of absenteeism of students?
All right. So, again, the schools do have a role, because you have some absenteeism that may be because of transportation. You have some absenteeism that may be as a result of maybe the child has an anxiety of a certain teacher. So, I mean, in terms of the schools, we want to make sure we have the best teachers possible. We want to make sure that they understand and connect with the children. We want to have transportation for our children. But at the same time, I'm going to go back to the kind of the theme of what we're talking about right now. Absenteeism. The teacher does not wake up at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning to go to maybe 25, 30 kids in the classroom, shake them all on the shoulder, say, let's get up, Johnny, let's get up, Sally, and get to school.
Right.
This is where I'm circling back, where the parents have a fundamental responsibility. At Kearney, I had this model I had developed. It was called the Triangle of Trust. And there were three components to it. It was family, educators, and children. It requires all three. If one of those links are missing, there's a problem. You know what I'm saying? If you have educators who aren't invested or not well-skilled or not well-versed, or they just don't like they gone to the profession for the wrong reason, that's the problem.
Right, they don't like it.
Yeah,
there are some who don't like it.
That impedes a child from learning. The child has to believe in themselves. The child has to say, wait a minute, I'm going to do the best I can. I might not understand this, but I'm going to stay and get a little bit of extra help. You know what I'm saying? In the families, it's paramount, because the family is the conduit or is the glue between the educational process and what the child learns. And I just feel like, because of just the way society has changed and our values have changed, we live in a society where some of us are expecting more than what we give. And when we do that, the world can be challenging, Chris. And I'm not trying to say you have to be a warrior out there, but you have to have a little bit of grit. You have to be able to overcome adversity.
Right,
you have to
yes.
say, just because something's going wrong in my life, I'm just going to give up, or I'm going to do something immoral or unethical. You have to have a little bit of grit, and you have to have a sense of priority. You have to take, Chris, and I learned this the hard way, you have to take care of your mental health. You have to make care of your mind, body, and spirit. And then you have to make sure that when your children are put into this world, my life changed when I had my first child, Chris. My life changed because the priorities of Ross and all the wonderful things I wanted became my firstborn, Raekwon. And that shifted the way, but I was able to make that shift, and that's because I had a mother who taught me how to make that shift.
Right.
Some family members, some parents, have a child who want to keep living the same life they were living before that. And we have to evolve and change. I'm getting older. I'm getting used to getting older, Chris. You know, you have to evolve and change with the things around you. So when you have a child, your priorities have to go from myself to my child.
We have Ross Grace Jr. We're broadcasting live from Honeydew Donuts in the south end of New Bedford, right on Conway Street. Come on down. We got a great crowd here. The drinks are great. The food is great. And we got people on hold. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning, Chris McCarthy.
Good morning, Mike Lima.
Hey, Ross.
Morning,
Grace,
Mr. Lima. How are you, sir? Oh, man, it's my buddy from New Directions, man. We used to work together at the cemetery. Remember that, Mike?
Oh, Ross, we go way back, my man. And I worked with your mother for 20 years.
Yeah. Mike, wasn't it more simple back then? And I don't know. The world changes. You figure with all the fancy things, all the gadgets, all technology, and all the AI, the world become easier. But didn't it seem like the simpler was better?
Of course it was a lot easier back then. But why I call is I just want to let you know I appreciate the 4 years you did. I know that the youth of New Bedford has always been something very close and dear to your heart. Even your family's hat, your brother Romaine doing big things up there at UMass Dartmouth, advising students. You know, he took, he went under the wing of Bobby Forts. Bobby Forts led him into being the man that he is today. And I'll end with this. Your mother.
Oh, yeah.
Just the nicest, sweetest person I ever met. And I'm glad and I'm fortunate I did about 20 years with her. Thanks for everything. Everybody have a great day. Thank you, Chris.
Mike, thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, and it goes down to the values. You know, my mother came from, you know, the 60s and 70s, very transformative time in our society and in our country. But she had a value of learning and growing in education. And she gave us a value of giving back because in this world, Chris, we are not islands. You know, it's important to think of ourselves and take care of ourselves. But we're all part of a fabric. And we're all connected. And you know, when it's all said and done, Chris, I have a beautiful home. I've done very well in my life by the grace of God. You know, I came from the project. I've been recognized, you know, but that stuff's all small potatoes. People don't remember that, you know what I'm saying? People aren't going to remember the Ross Grace's ups and downs in terms of what he had and didn't have. They're going to remember what Ross Grace, what Chris McCarthy did for the people around them. Like, we share, we want to leave things, we talked about this, we want to leave things a little bit better than what we came in. And that was a value that I was raised with. And I've gone into overdrive with that to my own expense, you know what I'm saying? But that's important because people aren't going to remember the cars, people aren't going to remember the trophies, they're going to remember the conversation you had with them. They're going to remember that when they were down and out, that you was a positive word to them. They're going to remember little life lessons that you taught them. Those are the things that we really leave behind. And my mother taught us those values, and I hold on to them. No matter how old I get, I carry those with me.
We're with Ross Grace Jr. We're broadcasting live from Honeydew Donuts here on Conway Street in the south end of New Bedford. So, Ross, there's a vacancy, as we mentioned. Yeah. The great Bruce Oliveira passed on way too soon. But there's an opening. There'll be a conference, a congress of the school committee members and the city council.
Yes.
What are some of the names you're hearing? Who would you maybe like to see come in? Or is that not the right question at this time?
Yeah, well, no. I mean, I haven't heard too many names. Let me talk about the process a little bit. I do get concerned because no matter what, when it's an elected official position, I think it's imperative that word gets out. I'll tell you how to win in the campaign. I learned this. You get your base. It doesn't even have to be that many people because, unfortunately, the voter turnout rate isn't that high in New Bedford, unfortunately. So you get your base. You have your base. Have a couple other people vote for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how you kind of win. And so if you're unable to do that and mobilize a certain at least have a circle around. If you're unable to do that, it makes it really, really hard to get in. And so I think in terms of the seat that's opened up by Bruce, it's not going to be something that everybody votes upon. And I understand that, but you want to have the word out so you draw the biggest pool as possible. And I do get concerned that that we may already have somebody in mind that just gets appointed. That's a double-edged sword because Bruce Oliveira was appointed. Look at how amazing he is. But I just believe in process being as open as possible. You know, I campaigned hard, Chris.
My name
was everywhere. I put signs everywhere. Right. I was everywhere. You know, it's important that if you're an elected official that you show that investment in connection to your community by being out there getting the word. So I think it's our responsibility as city officials to make sure the word's out there as much as possible so you just don't have this small circle or we're just putting somebody in because they're our friend or a buddy.
Right.
I hope that's not the case. The one who I do support, Chris, and he's a young man. His name is Mr. Marcus Coward.
Yeah, he ran last time.
And Marcus is an astonishing young man. I think he has a common sense approach. He's not ideologically driven. He's very, very practical. And I don't know if he's going to get in, but I'm behind him, and I'm pretty sure that his name's going to be in there. If I were to give any advice to Max, because he's master social media, and Christian, I believe in social media. It's a new way the communication is out and about. We used to have the Standard Time, Boston Globe. It's just different now, and those tools are still important. But Max did really, really good with the social media. What benefited me was connecting with different organizations as well. You have to identify people who do vote. Like, I'd go into, like, the place where they were, like, elderly and stuff, because those people come out in high numbers.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So you got to be visible. You got to convey a message. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm hoping within this process going to be, I'm not even going to be on it, unfortunately, Christian. It's going to be the news committee board and council and the mayor. And hopefully we get the right person in.
We have Ross Grace Jr. Of course, we're broadcasting live from Honeydew Donuts. Come on down and see us. Have a cup of coffee. Have a Red Bull drink. Have a sandwich. Have a donut. We'll be right back.
This portion of programming on WBSM brought to you by South Coast Health. Advanced medicine, more care. South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Welcome back to the program. It's a beautiful day here at Honeydew Donuts in the New Bedford area. We're right off Route 18, Conway Street. Honeydew Donuts, one of Walter Moniz's stores. He's got a couple in the city, a bunch in the region. Stop on by. We'd love to see you. Get a donut, get a drink. Really great stuff here. We're speaking with Ross Grace Jr., who's just finishing up a term on the school committee. Ross, talk about school safety, metal detectors. We just saw that shooting at Brown University. Yeah. I believe one of your children went to Brown.
My child went there. I hit him a little bit hard.
Right.
And Chris, I mean, this is one of those things. We're living in a trench warfare society. We're living in a society right now where everything is drawn upon party lines and I keep using the word ideologues. And when people hear the word safety and security, they associate it with a certain mindset. And I understand all that, except let me tell you right now, Chris, my responsibility as assistant principal was making sure that when that parent dropped their child off with their faith in me, in my schools, to keep their children safe, my goal before anything else to make sure when that child left, they left the exact same way that they walked into that building.
Right.
Without being beat up, without being hurt, without feeling fearful. And so I don't believe in intrusive security. I don't believe in John Wayne cowboy SROs walking across our building. But I do believe that we have to take common sense approaches to make sure that we are minimizing the chances of something bad happening to a child. And Chris, I know there were some people who were a little bit surprised at the stance that I took, but at the same time, picture your child going into a school and another child slides something into that building. I've seen the children tased at Keith Middle School. A child was tased there. By another child. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, a child smuggles taser into the middle schools. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've seen this. In the middle schools, especially during cafeteria time, you could see children get seriously hurt. Some kids would bring things in. There are conflicts and things. And again, I understand all this, except there are things that go on outside the schools that can be brought into the schools.
Sure.
So as long as we're not going in there and targeting children and saying, all right, wait a minute, and like doing a strip search or anything, you want to have things just like when you go to a stadium, you go to the Providence Civic Center, you want to have things that minimize the chances of bad things. Have metal detectors. And it was not true. That to me, it was a no-brainer.
Yep.
But there were some people who opposed it, and I respect that. I understand the, I understand the book smart people, and I understand the thing, you know, people say, well, if the teacher's really engaging the student, then the child's behavior is going to go down. And that is one piece of it. But we do have some students, because of their socioeconomic conditions or just
whatever,
where they find a way in the world, that do things that
antisocial behavior.
That's a real good way of putting it.
Right.
That are harmful to themselves, and that's just the reality.
Some kids will bring a weapon to school.
We've seen it. And again, you know what I mean? A lot of those times, those things take place in the building, and the families may not know, except that stuff does happen. I think the superintendent, I'm going to speak about Mr. Andrew O'Leary. The reason why I was adamant about him getting in was because not only did he work in the public schools, I think he has a philosophy that is very congruent with mine. I think he has the right set of values, but he also is very student-centered, not just for the academic testing, except making sure that the basic needs, we talked about make sure they're eating every day. We're talking about the health center and safety. I think most parents should agree that right. when they drop their child off, when they pick them up, right. they want their child looking the same exact right. way right. without a bruise or, right. you know. So to me, that was important. You know what I'm saying? Except again, like I said, right now we're living in a time that that's so divided that sometimes people aren't even thinking about, all right, what's really going on in the building. They hear certain code words or certain bingo words, and they're like, oh, nope, that's not right. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to think about the entire picture. And again, I worked in the buildings. The teachers can only do so much to keep a building safe. You know what I'm saying? Some students are very adept at doing what they want to do. And so why not put something in place to at least decrease the chances of right. something bad happening?
How do you feel about SROs in the schools, meaning police officers in the schools, yeah. with a good man with a gun type of thing?
Yeah, well, and again, I'll cast some. I'm sure there's some people who don't agree with me, and there's some people who don't. I grew up not being a big fan of cops. You know what I'm saying? That was just kind of like my background, especially in the age and time I grew up in. But one of the most beneficial things that I've learned through all my experiences and everything is having good people. So now there's a big difference between having a John Wayne type who's walking around and bogart in the building. You don't want that in the building. I think some people get that mixed up with SRO, a school. SRO is a school resource officer. The key word is resource. Now, if I have a certain perspective on police, and I mean an officer who enjoys working with kids, mm-hmm. like the SROs work, they help coach basketball. I used to do a program for kids who were on the autistic spectrum, a breakfast program. The SRO would come in there and sit with us while we had breakfast together, grow right. social skills. The SRO was helping to coach basketball. Now what's that doing? We're talking about change. We're talking about society getting better. That's breaking down barriers and preconceived notions that exist between students and families and an officer. Ultimately, we do need police officers. You know what I'm saying? We do need them. We don't need bigoted ones or John Wayne types, but we need officers to keep us safe who understand the community. And I know the SROs who I worked with strongly changed how I seen police officers. And not only that, Chris, and I'm going on and on, I've seen students who worked with the SROs at the elementary level. They got older, they might find themselves into a situation, but now they have a resource. They have somebody who they know, you know what I'm saying, who can help guide them through things. I think the SRO program is a good program, and that's been peeled back quite a bit because just of community pushback. And again, I understand it, but I think when most people think of SROs, I think you have some who may be a little bit rough, but I think people are thinking about like this militant cop marching up and down the hallways. And from my experience working in the buildings, I didn't see that as much. Right. I think they did a really, really good job. Most of the SROs I worked with were New Bedford guys.
Yeah.
We had a lot of Cape Verdean SROs. And we had a lot of really good Latino SROs. And we had a lot of good white SROs. So you had a good spectrum of people from different cultures and nationalities, which allowed them to connect with the students. And the students would kind of learn from them. Sure. You know, and it breaks down barriers. That's what it's all about. Within the most polarized times that we've had in a long time, you know, that was one thing when you talk about breaking down stereotypes, misconceptions, and barriers. That was one of the most effective ways.
We have Ross Grace Jr. here with us. He's finished up his term on the school committee. We're at Honeydew Donuts. Come on down and visit us. Hank Turgeon just walked through the door. Come on down. We'll be right back. Good morning. We're live here at Honeydew Donuts right off Route 18 on Conway Street, finishing up with Ross Grace Jr., who's finishing up his four-year term. Hope you have a great Christmas, Ross.
Oh, Chris, thank you so much. And listen, to all the families out there, number one, Chris, I'd just be remiss if I didn't thank every single person, every family member, every student, every educator who I had the blessing and privilege of serving for 17, 18 years in a school building. And I want to thank the people who came out and believed in me, even in my mistakes and my good times, for believing in me. I want to thank him. I want to wish everybody a happy holiday season. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, however you celebrate. Right. That's none of my business. That's none of my business. But enjoy time with your loved ones. Give. Don't always take. Don't always ask. Give. And just enjoy. Take time for yourselves and your loved ones just to step back and enjoy the blessings of your life.
Ross, if you want to say hello, Merry Christmas, and hello to all your kids, your mom. Thank go
you.
Ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, and to my three amazing children, my Raekwon, my Lynn, my Raina, Merry Christmas. Your dad loves you. You guys are first and foremost in your life. My mom, you know, who believed in me through everything, who raised me the right way in the spirit of my dad. I want to thank you all. And again, my teachers in particular, Kearney Academy, Keith Middle School, the Old Normand, and all the educators out there. I did my my very, very best just to make sure teachers had a voice. With the current administration, I think we're good. But there was a time where teachers was fearful of speaking. They were fearful of saying things that were going on in the building. And I wanted to be a small part. A small, small part to make sure that when they said something or they believed in something, it was being translated to the administration. I think we did a decent job. And I just want to thank you. And that's not to say Ross Grace is off the picture. I'm still going to be around, Chris.
Listen, you see all the people coming by to say hello to you here at Honeydew Donuts right on Conway Street, Route 18. I don't think this is the last of Ross Grace Jr. politically.
Chris, I'll be honest. Dad, me second-guessing myself. Right. I'm over here sipping my coffee. I'm like, did I make a decision? I thought about it. I prayed upon it. So, number one, I'm always available. I'm on social media. I'm easy accessible. I might do a little bit of Little League Baseball, Chris. Nice. I missed that. I might get into another community organization or start a group for men because there needs to be support for men. Things have changed so much. So I was thinking about like starting a men's group. I don't know. But I will be doing some things, and don't count Ross Grace out of not having future political aspirations. But right now, I'm going to enjoy the good life. I'm going back to D.C. in March, and I'm going to just enjoy a lot of stuff I worked for.
I appreciate it, Ross. I really do. Merry Christmas, my friend.
Merry Christmas.
Folks, come on down to Honeydew Donuts. We'll be joined by Tom Hodgson coming up next, as he always joins me here in the 11 o'clock.